Confused about whether or not gluten is bad for you? You're not alone. Do you have to be celiac to avoid gluten, or is there something else? Celiac, gluten sensitivity, wheat allergy, leaky gut, and more. Brain fog, anxiety, bloating, or intestinal distress? You know what we mean. Today, we are going to unpack all that and get you some clarity on whether gluten is your friend or foe. Welcome to the Brain Podcast. We blend medical insights with behavior design principles to empower you in creating brain healthy habits. We aim to demystify brain health, enhance focus, and reduce the risk of dementia down the line. So join us as we unlock the secrets of the brain, all backed by science and fueled by behavior design.
Hi, I'm Dr. Shabnam Daskar. I'm a functional medicine doctor and a certified tiny habits coach. I teach people how to improve their focus, get rid of brain fog, and reduce their risk of dementia down the line.
And I'm Andrea Spiros. I'm a professional speaker, tiny habits certified coach, and behavior design consultant. I work with organizations to harness the power of high performance habits to increase engagement, resilience, and well-being. So today, let's just define what we're talking about. What is gluten anyway? I want to start with a super quick story. Many years ago, before as the gluten hype was just starting, I had a fellow mom sit next to me and say, here's a great snack. It's fat-free, caffeine-free, sugar-free, and gluten-free. And then she paused and said, I don't know what gluten is anyway, but if it's free of it, it must be better. And I think that's where a lot of people are. They're like, oh, it's free of something, so it must be better for me. And they don't even know what it is. So what is gluten, Shabnam, and why is it important?
Okay, so Andrea, you brought up something so important, and after I define what is gluten, I'll tell you what I used to think, because back in the days when I was in India, what I used to think about gluten.
Yes, I want to hear.
So gluten is actually a combination of two proteins called gliadin and glutenin. Now, we don't have to bother with the names, but they are found in things like wheat, barley, rye, couscous, which is, I think, made of wheat, and similar grains. And it's not in rice, and it's not in buckwheat, though the name buckwheat would tell us that it's probably a part of wheat, but buckwheat is gluten-free.
It's actually a flour. That's my favorite fun fact. Buckwheat.
No. And now when it comes to oats, what happens is some oats can have gluten because very likely because of cross-contamination. So if someone is eating oats, they need to check whether it says certified gluten-free. Now, my story about gluten. So this was many years ago when I first started my education as a functional medicine doctor. I was, you know, all my professors were from, you know, US and Canada. They talk about, oh, you need to stop eating gluten because of autoimmunity, because of this, because of that. And I thought, oh, this must be a very North American thing. It doesn't happen in India, because in India, we've been eating wheat like since forever.
Yeah, everything.
And I negotiated with it for a long time until I finally said, why am I doing that? Like, let me get off of gluten and see what it is. And that is what we're going to talk about today, Andrea, how I found out about my gluten sensitivity and how a lot of other people, our audience, can do that as well.
And I think it's really important that a lot of people, I have my own story too, and a lot of people don't really realize, I think they are in a couple of camps. One, oh, it's the latest trend, you have to get up gluten, or the other, like, maybe this is the thing for me. And, you know, I think in behavior design and in our methodology, not really methodology, but in the way we think, we want you to do what's right for you and do what you can do, but also don't do all those other things that are not important for you. Like, if gluten is not a problem for you, then enjoy it. Have what you like. So let's talk about how someone might know that they have a problem with gluten. Like, what symptoms would they see?
Yeah, and that was like a major aha moment for me, because there are so many symptoms. Most of us think that since gluten is a part of food, so the symptoms of gluten sensitivity should be only related to the gut, like bloating and IBS and diarrhea and stomach pain. But what multiple studies have found, and here is where I'm going to differentiate between gluten sensitivity and celiac disease in a moment, but going back to the symptoms. So yes, pain and bloating and diarrhea are some of the common symptoms, but things like brain fog, joint pain, headaches, nausea, I mentioned, you know, IBS, reflux, constipation, tiredness, anxiety, depression, who would have thought, you know?
Yeah.
Skin lesions like acne, and you know, there are certain other skin conditions which sometimes people don't relate them to gluten, but many patients have said, oh, once I stopped eating gluten, you know, that itchiness I used to complain about, it's gone. Then things like, you know, loss of balance, that is a very serious problem called cerebellar ataxia. It's a neurological problem. Autism, hallucinations, disturbed sleep, ADHD, bipolar disorders. So there are a whole long list of more than 30 symptoms. Schizophrenia, and you know, Andrea, whenever I talk about schizophrenia being a symptom, a possible symptom of gluten sensitivity, I remember a patient of mine. So he was a 30-year-old man with diagnosed schizophrenia. And he said, I've heard that functional medicine has, you know, a whole lot of better approaches. I said, yeah, you are on medication. That's wonderful. Stay on the medications. And as I recommend to all my patients, they have to test. And we'll come to the testing part and how we find out whether someone is gluten sensitive. So I said, you need to do this, you know, get off of gluten. And in 3 days' time, he sent me an email saying, Doctor, my schizophrenia symptoms are better because I got off of gluten. I said, wow. Really? Like, are you sure it's the gluten or it's not? Because I also asked you to take a whole bunch of supplements. And like, have you not been missing your medicines now? Like, I want to be sure, you know, because it sounds so magical. Like, he said, no, doctor, I am 100% sure it's when I got off of the gluten, I am feeling so much better and nothing else has changed. So that was like, oh my God, things like, you know, ADHD. We talked about ADHD on some other forum before, Andrea, where ADHD is diagnosed so often these days. And I'm not saying that getting off of gluten is the only solution, but yes, this is like one of the things people can try.
It's easy to do. It's not invasive. Well, I guess I shouldn't say it's easy to do. If your diet is full of glutinous things, it might be a little bit more challenge. And I think what you bring up is, I want to highlight, circle, and star this. We are not saying that getting off of gluten is a panacea for all that ails you.
Yes, right? We're not saying that.
We are not saying, but what we are saying is there is a large amount of at least anecdotal stories.
Andrea, it's not anecdotal. We'll post the study.
Actual, yes, studies. Okay, so thank you. So there's a good amount of information and anecdotes of our own and your clients, your patients, who it has actually helped. You know, I have my own story. I have at least a dozen stories from other people. You have seen it in your practice. But we do want to caution listeners that we're not saying pop off your medication and get off gluten and everything's going to be fine.
Oh, no, no.
It's definitely something you can try, but keep on doing what you're already doing and then notice for yourself. And this is another reason why it's really important for you to test, right? To make sure.
So, Andrea, I would love to know what your gluten story is.
My gluten story is I had one child and then I was having trouble getting pregnant again. And I decided to go to a nutritionist and she said, okay, I want you to try to eat this in the morning. And it was like a combination of oats and wheat germ or oat germ and some flax or something like that. And I don't eat breakfast like that. I've never really eaten breakfast like that. And I thought, you know, Maybe it's because I started dieting very early. It's not very healthy. And so that's why. And I thought, you know what? I'm an adult now. That's an old pattern. I'm going to this nutritionist. I'm going to take her advice. And so I started eating it. She's like, you eat it at 8 in the morning, you'll hold you till 2 in the afternoon. And I said, you know, I don't feel so good after I eat that breakfast. And I feel worse when there's wheat bran in it than when there's oat bran. But I felt tired and foggy and very low energy. And she said, oh, maybe you have a gluten sensitivity. Let's do a quick test. Just don't have gluten for a week. See how you feel. And so I didn't. And I had much more energy. And I'll fast forward a bit. I realized I did a couple experiments with wheat and dairy and gluten, or rather gluten, dairy, and sugar. I ended up going off all of those for a couple months. Mm-hmm. I had so much energy. I could rule the world. I was clear. I was sharp. I was focused. I can't even describe how much energy I had. And I got pregnant like immediately when we started to try. Wow. And the funny part is that after that, I was so morning sick that I just had to eat all the time. And I didn't really feel great after that, but I had this experience. And in the intervening years, I've kind of experimented with it. I know when, cause I'm not zero on it, but I know when I have it, I don't feel as good. And I jokingly, but accurately say that pizza is my gateway food. So after I have pizza, I really need to watch, because then I start craving all sorts of carby, glutinous things. But I know it doesn't make me feel good. So
there's so much to unpack there, because you brought up something very important about, you know, gluten and fertility. And not that, you know, based on your story, we can't really say that getting off of gluten helped improve your fertility, but something very important that I am a former OBGY, and I didn't know this until I started studying about gluten and celiac disease. So people with celiac disease, and very soon we are going to get into how you're going to differentiate the two and how to know whether you are gluten sensitive. So people with celiac disease, number one, diagnosis can take a long time. It can take up to 7 to 10 years. And women who have undiagnosed celiac disease can have infertility. And the other very important thing is they may have recurrent pregnancy loss. So they have miscarriages repeatedly, at least 3 is the medical definition. And when we investigate, I'm talking about many years ago, when I used to investigate women for recurrent pregnancy loss, I don't remember looking for celiac disease then. And, you know, one of these events in Calgary, they had this one of these health fairs, and the Celiac Society of Canada had a booth. And there was this older lady I was talking to who was volunteering there. And she said, you know, I wish people knew about fertility and celiac disease earlier. She said, I don't have children. And for so many years we were trying, and my celiac disease was not diagnosed until I was way older and could not have children. That is such a sad story.
That is a hugely sad story. And I feel for that person, because I know just even with so many friends, but having miscarriages, just a miscarriage can be heartbreaking. I had a friend who was trying to get pregnant and had several miscarriages and diagnosed herself with celiac disease.
Oh my God.
And no doctor would. And she was, you know, the typical celiac is you're rail thin, you have a failure to thrive. That wasn't her.
Mm.
Even when she asked to be tested, the doctor was like, you don't fit the profile, like meaning you don't look like it.
Yeah.
When he tested her, she found out that she had celiac. But not every person is going to have the wherewithal or the drive to do this deep research to find it. So I think that's really important.
Yeah, important. And I'm sure there are many doctors who are not aware of this either, because, I mean, when I was an OBGY, we never thought of celiac disease screening as a part of recurrent pregnancy loss investigation. I hope things have changed, because I've not been in that world for a while. But, and this lady at the event, she told me, you know, please make sure that you talk to people about this, because I don't want someone else having the same story as me.
Yes, exactly. So let's talk about the difference. Like, what is celiac? What is gluten sensitivity, or often referred to as non-celiac gluten sensitivity? And what is wheat allergy? Because I think people tend to lump quote unquote problems with gluten in one bucket. And there's actually a few different ways, and it's important to know the difference.
Yeah. So let's get the wheat allergy out of the way, because that is, so wheat allergy is just like how people have peanut allergy or other nut allergy. It's a serious problem, acute problem. They need to go to the ER, or many of them carry an EpiPen. So it's acute problem, not like all those symptoms I described, pain and bloating and diarrhea when someone has eats something that contains wheat or gluten. That's a very serious problem. And people who have any of those allergies, wheat allergy or any of them, they usually know that. Like, they have been diagnosed and it's an acute problem. It's a, sometimes it can be a life-threatening emergency. So they need to go to the ER right away. So if any of our listeners, you are someone who has that kind of a problem, please make sure you meet your doctor and don't try to self-diagnose and self-treat. So we have now wheat allergies out of the way. The next two things is non-celiac gluten sensitivity and celiac disease. It's very important to differentiate between the two, because Andrea, numerous times my patients have, you know, come back and told me, because again, this is anecdotal, but very important for people to try it out for themselves. When I tell my patients, you need to get off. So we start off with something called an elimination diet, where people eliminate gluten, dairy, soy, processed food, sugar, caffeine. And depending on the severity of their symptoms, they might need to get rid of a whole bunch of other food. But gluten and dairy are the commonest ones. And 90% of my patients come back and tell me, I didn't know gluten could be such a big problem. And so sometimes patients have this long journey of, you know, meeting multiple specialists and lots of other doctors. And my practice is mostly in India, so people can meet a specialist very easily there. So many of my patients who were sort of diagnosed with IBS, and they were told there's nothing much you can do. And they went to multiple gastroenterologists who had done celiac disease tests. And they told the patients, you don't have to get off of gluten because you don't have celiac disease.
Right.
Now, they didn't talk about non-celiac gluten sensitivity, where the person does not have celiac disease, but they have all these whole bunch of symptoms when they eat gluten-containing food. Like, I get joint pain and headache if I eat gluten.
Yeah.
And like you said, you know, you described your foggy brain and fatigue and a lot of things. I described my patient with schizophrenia. So it's, someone may not have celiac disease, but may still have gluten sensitivity. And non-celiac gluten sensitivity has there is something called the Salerno criteria. And I'll post all those links on the show notes. So how do we find out whether it is, how can you find out whether you have non-celiac gluten sensitivity? I will post the form and the links and everything on the show notes. So what basically happens is there are a whole bunch of these symptoms that we talked about. And what you do is first do the, you know, complete the quiz and see how many of those symptoms you have. Then stop eating all gluten-containing food. And when I say all, Andrea, I usually tell my patients, I mean 110%.
Yeah.
I'm just going to have a little bit of gluten. It was somebody's birthday, so I had some cake. No, for 2 weeks, I think it's not, you can do that. And most of my patients are okay to doing that, because they have gazillions of problems and they're looking for solutions.
And I think it's important when you're talking about 110%, you know, I mean, 0000, none.
Yeah.
Also, that requires looking at labels.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, yeah. Probably it's my view on gluten, giving up gluten, is just eat things that are naturally don't contain gluten.
Yes. You know what I mean?
right? Yes, just don't even try to substitute that.
We will come to that. We
have but if you are going to eat processed food, right, that totally get that. You're already giving up gluten. Then you do need to, on what you're talking about, look at the labels for any gluten, hidden gluten-containing products, ingredients rather. Because that's usually where, because the magic happens when it's at zero, correct? When you have zero.
Yeah. And again, some people may say, oh, it's not as big a problem for me. So it's different things. So anyway, so 2 weeks, first do the, complete the quiz, see where, how many of the symptoms you have. 2 weeks, stop gluten completely. Then reintroduce gluten for 1 or 2 days. And then do the same quiz again. So once you do the quiz again and you find that your symptoms are less by about 30%, that these are scientific criteria, so 30%. Yeah. Most of my patients have not done the calculations.
Right, yeah.
Most of them tell me, doctor, I felt so much better when I got off the gluten. I don't need to do the reintroduction ever again.
Right. And that was my experience of the same thing. Like, again, I'm very clear. I do still have some gluten. I really do limit it because I know what it does for me. It makes me a little foggy. But because I don't have celiac, I don't worry as much. I'm a little more balanced. But it's often remarkable when people have that awareness of, this is how I feel, think, act, amount of energy I have when I'm off gluten versus when I'm on. And it's very powerful.
Yeah. So there are some people who, as a functional medicine doctor, I would say don't reintroduce. They are people with autoimmune conditions like psoriasis, celiac disease, rheumatoid arthritis, ankylosing spondylosis, Hashimoto's thyroiditis. There are more than 80 to 100 different autoimmune conditions. And we will talk about, you know, gut barrier dysfunction and why I tell them that you need to get off of gluten 110% and don't reintroduce, don't challenge your immune system to find out whether you have this problem. So that is gluten sensitivity. Now, when it comes to celiac disease, so celiac disease is, again, an autoimmune condition. So an autoimmune condition is when our body's own immune system tries to destroy our own healthy organs. Now, in celiac disease, what happens is people who have celiac disease, when they eat gluten-containing food, it destroys their intestinal lining. So, Andrea, you described the, you know, the emaciated, thin woman with, you know, nutritionally not adequate. That was the picture years ago we had of celiac disease because they didn't absorb nutrients well. Anemia was very common in them. Iron deficiency anemia, even more common. But everyone doesn't have those severe symptoms. So gluten is the sort of the trigger for celiac disease. So these people have severe gluten sensitivity, and they also have the genes for celiac disease. So right. There are two specific genes. Now, without the genes, most people will not have an autoimmune condition. So for anyone to develop an autoimmune condition, a few things have to happen at the same time. Number one is they have to have the genes. For celiac disease, there are two specific genes, which are the commonest ones. Then there has to be a problem with the gut barrier or leaky gut. We'll come to that later. And third thing is there has to be a trigger. And the fourth thing is, of course, gut dysbiosis. So gut dysbiosis, we'll talk about that on another day. But the trigger for celiac disease we know is gluten, whereas for a whole lot of other autoimmune conditions, we don't necessarily know the trigger. Now, some studies have shown that gluten can increase the gut barrier dysfunction or cause leaky gut. Leaky gut is a term most people are more familiar with, whereas, you know, gastroenterologists like to use the gut barrier dysfunction because, you know, it's not like the gut develops holes.
But it means that for anyone listening, barrier dysfunction, your gastroenterologist is going to use that one, but it's kind of commonly known as leaky gut to, you know,
Yeah. So leaky gut is way easier to say than, you know, the other more difficult term. Exactly. So leaky gut is related to gluten for a lot of people. So that is the reason for anyone with an autoimmune condition. I tell them you have to stop eating gluten 110%. So going back to celiac disease and non-celiac gluten sensitivity, sometimes when people test for celiac disease, there are some specific blood tests available, and these tests are available anywhere in the world. Those tests are not always positive for people with non-celiac gluten sensitivity, but at the same time, these people feel better when they get off of the gluten. Now, right. Some doctors will tell their patients, oh, you did not test positive for celiac disease, so you don't have a problem with, you know, gluten. That is not true. There is enough scientific evidence to tell us about non-celiac gluten sensitivity.
And that's where the quiz will be very helpful. Taking the quiz will be very helpful.
Yeah. So, and the other important thing is if someone wants to do the celiac disease blood test, they need to be taking gluten. So if they are not eating gluten at that point, even if they have celiac disease, the test will not show positive. Right. And another important thing to differentiate. So I tell my patients, they'll say, doctor, do you think this is celiac disease or is it non-celiac gluten sensitivity? So I tell them the treatment for both are the same. You don't eat gluten-containing food. So if they have children or if they have a known family history of celiac disease, then I tell them, okay, it's important to know whether you have the genes, because if you have children, you might want to be careful. Maybe you want your kids to get off of gluten earlier. So it's important for those patients. But if it is for the treatment is the same for celiac disease as well as non-celiac gluten sensitivity. But for celiac disease, of course, it's way more stricter. And of course, we have to look for nutritional deficiencies and all those things. And so it's very important to differentiate between celiac disease and non-celiac gluten sensitivity. If someone says your celiac disease tests are negative, so you can eat gluten, that is not always true.
Right. And sometimes it's real, and not sometimes, it is very important, like you said, to be eating gluten if you're having that celiac test. Mm. Because if you're not, I had a relative who was off gluten for quite a while, and her joints felt better, more energy. It had a lot of achy joints, but wanted to be tested for celiac. And the doctor's like, well, you got to start eating gluten again. And decided, yeah. So started, had some gluten, woke up the next day full of aches and pains, and just said, you know what? I don't need to take that test. Now, if you, like you said, you know, because they knew gluten just didn't do it and they needed to stay off all of it. But like you said, it's often important if you have children, relatives, to identify that. And especially because you might want to take some different action with children, right? Getting them off of gluten earlier, if that genetic component is there, so that gluten does not trigger it. And I think you bring up a very good point that there are several things that have to happen at the same time. So if you don't have the gene for the celiac genes or the two genes, then don't worry. I mean, if you're sensitive, it's a different story, but it's not like eating gluten will trigger it, right? People eating gluten are sensitive. If they don't have the gene, they will not get celiac. Mm. So it's important to know. And that's true. That's very important to differentiate. You still might decide to get off gluten, but let's soothe your anxiety about giving, quote unquote, giving yourself celiac. That's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
If you don't.
Yeah, that's right. And another question I get very often, Andrea, is there a test for non-celiac gluten sensitivity? So yeah, technically, there is no specific test for gluten sensitivity, though there is a test called a zonulin test, which can actually, zonulin basically doesn't test for gluten sensitivity. What it tests for is a leaky gut. Anyway, we are not going down that route. But another important factor when we talk about celiac disease is because it's an autoimmune condition, we know that when someone has one autoimmune condition, their chances of having others are higher. So someone with celiac disease may also have Hashimoto's thyroiditis, that is hypothyroidism, because of an autoimmune condition, or they may have psoriasis, or they may have lupus. So sometimes autoimmune conditions can take years to be diagnosed because the symptoms can sometimes be non-specific, and the doctors are often not thinking of autoimmunity because it's not like that's the reason celiac disease is sometimes diagnosed so late, because it's, you must have had eaten something that did not agree with you. So you're having bloating and diarrhea, and this goes on and on for years. And that's why it's important to keep those in mind, because sometimes they get missed.
Yes. And we want people to advocate for themselves too, so that they don't have to wait 7 to 10 years to figure something out.
Yeah. And also fertility and recurrent pregnancy loss. Like how did I not know? That was my first reaction.
Right. Well, we learned that, everything evolves, and we're obviously learning more and more about foods we eat and how they affect us. And there's a little bit more of a holistic, a lot more people who look at the body and mind as in a holistic way, as opposed to just, very acute. If it's a gut, it's from the gut. If it's in your eye, it's from your eye. It's from your elbow, it's, must be from your elbow. We're looking at things a little more holistically. So I think we've talked about, not everyone needs to go off gluten, right?
Yeah, not everyone needs to go off of gluten. But again, I see patients, obviously I see people who have a problem, otherwise why would they come to me?
Right.
So, and I see a lot of patients with autoimmunity, and Hashimoto's, like hypothyroidism, because our immune system is making antibodies against our own thyroid gland. That's a very common condition. And very often people are not tested for thyroid antibodies, and these tests are available anywhere in the world. So most doctors outside the functional medicine world would say, why do we need to test for the antibodies? Because there's nothing much we can do about it. That is not true. So there are things. One of the things that people who, obviously what it means is the higher the antibodies, it is possible that the worse the thyroid function. So antibodies can increase, can lower thyroid function to a level where you need higher and higher doses of medications. Now, thyroid antibodies have been shown, and these are clinical studies, not just my patients telling me.
Right.
Where they found that once patients get off of gluten, their antibody levels fall. So there are studies, and anecdotally, I have seen it in so many patients. And the other important thing to remember is you don't repeat your thyroid antibody tests just 2 weeks after getting off of gluten. You need to wait for 6 to 9 months before repeating it and staying off of gluten. And so that is one important thing which I want to highlight. And of course, getting rid of thyroid antibodies, there's another supplement called selenium. But I think, Andrea, we're going to discuss about thyroid one day, so we'll get into that.
But it's since we're pointing out a lot of what gluten can affect if you have any of these autoimmune dysfunctions, then it's just important to have that bookmarked in your mind, and we'll do a later podcast. What else do people need to know before we wrap up? What else do people need to know about gluten sensitivity, celiac, leaky gut?
So first and foremost, Andrea, we have highlighted it multiple times that do you really need to get off of gluten? So best is do the, track your symptoms, get off of gluten for 2 weeks, reintroduce if you think you want to do it. And then you decide. And rather than waiting and, it's just a fad, or my doctor says it's not that, it's not this, just do the self-testing. And the other thing, Andrea, I don't have any problems asking anyone to get off of gluten, because all gluten-containing food are actually high in carbohydrates, all these grains. And carbohydrate is not an essential nutrient. That means our bodies are not going to have a carbohydrate deficiency if we don't eat carbohydrates. And
carbohydrates in gluten-containing foods, because we're going to get carbohydrates from beans and vegetables and other things like that.
And another thing you brought up, Andrea, is what you said about eating naturally gluten-free food versus going gluten-free. So my friend Mikhail describes this very well. So what happens very often, and I am guilty of that as well, it's like, oh, I'm not going to eat gluten. So I go to the store and I find all this gluten-free bread and gluten-free cookies and all the other
gluten-free chips, you know, because potato chips are gluten-free.
Oh, so, yeah.
You know, tortilla chips are gluten-free. You can have a whole bag of those.
Corn is gluten-free.
Right.
So the thing is, once you decide that you're not going to eat gluten-containing food, it's important to make sure that you don't choose all these processed food, which are usually, most of them are high in sugar and, you know, all whole lot of preservatives and enzymes and colorings and things like that.
Which are not generally, generally not a lot of fiber or other things.
No.
And a lot of times they're just not satisfying.
No.
Thing about, you know, having a food that's supposed to be another food and it not, you know, it missing the mark. Whereas if you know, have an apple instead of having something else, or you have some vegetables, or you're probably going to be, you know, or some mashed potatoes or baked potatoes, you're probably going to be a little more satisfied than the thing that's substituting, a poor substitute for, you know, a gluten containing product, and you'll be healthier overall.
Yeah. And again, you know, it's not like you never eat any of the, like in our family, we do eat gluten-free pizzas sometimes. And there are a whole bunch of these cauliflower-based pizza, rice-based pizza, and gluten-free bread occasionally. So it's not like we don't eat any of that stuff ever. No.
It's not a complete, what people tend to do, and you actually put is like, I'm gluten-free, and now I'm going to just even bring in more things that I probably would never eat, chips and crackers just to fill a hole. It's just like anything, gluten-free pizza, you want to have a pizza, that's the way to do it if you need to stay off gluten. But you're just going to balance things. I think a lot of times we really talk about balancing as best you can, right? So you have to have some gluten-free pizza if you need, have some gluten-free bread if you need, after, especially if you're getting through your first couple of weeks, and then you can take the next step if you decide that going gluten-free is the thing for you, about where that fits, how often you have those gluten-free substitutes, and how, and experiment with what else you have in your food diet.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts?
No, I think I'll just summarize we talked about so many things, my God. So first of all, the differences between non-celiac gluten sensitivity and celiac disease. So if you have tested negative for celiac disease, that does not mean you don't have gluten sensitivity. So only way to know about gluten sensitivity is stopping gluten-containing food and see how you do with regard to your symptoms. The other important thing is fertility that we talked about. And if you are someone who's had recurrent miscarriages and not been screened for celiac disease, maybe that is something you want to look at. Another thing, you know, Andrea, because I'm a former OBGY, I keep going back to that. Endometriosis is so common, and again, not always easily diagnosed. There are some studies showing that women with endometriosis, when they got off of gluten, now it didn't cure their endometriosis, but their pain got better. And some of the other mental health symptoms like anxiety and depression, those got better. So that is another thing. And yes, so what are we concluding, Andrea?
We should, friend or foe. Well, I think that's up to you whether it's friend or foe. And now you have the tools, if you're listening, to ascertain that for yourselves. Take the gluten sensitivity test, see where you score on that, and then take the appropriate action. If you score high on that and you want to go forward and take a couple weeks off gluten and then reintroduce and take the test again, we encourage you to do that. If you are struggling with a lot of the symptoms, then you may want to get a test for celiac, especially if you have children. or any other autoimmune diseases, or even if autoimmune diseases run in your family, because then you can head things off a little more quickly. But the most important thing is to match what is for you. If you don't have no symptoms, if you have tons of energy, if you're doing fine, no autoimmune disease, then gluten's probably your friend. But if you have a few things going on, you may want to take that quiz. So thank you for listening. If you have enjoyed this, please subscribe. And you can find all the podcasts at drkarmd.com/podcast. That's drkarmd.com/podcast. Cheers, everyone.
Thank you. Bye now.